They all come from three very distinct, different backgrounds. You've got Ruby Riott coming from a broken home, clawing her way out of the gutter to get here. You've got Liv Morgan. She came from New Jersey. We know nothing good comes from there.
He's right, you know.
It's business time, baby.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
My client!
Mama Monster!
Conquered the street!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat! Delete!
You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
It is Elimination Chamber Sunday here on a rainy, raw, disgustingly nasty day in New York. I am the Sala Monster. This is episode 536 of the Sala Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, February 25th, 2018. Welcome to everybody listening on Spotify. We are now available on Spotify in case you don't already know. I know a lot of you are streaming us that way, so welcome. We have Elimination Chamber predictions, thoughts on the gauntlet match from Raw Monday night, the plight of SmackDown Live, which is really just a terrible show at the moment. That show made me terribly angry watching on Tuesday night. So a lot to get into here. First, I want to show some love to Audible. Those of you who are still using our link to cash in to get yourself a free book, audibletrial.com/Sala Monster. The offer still stands for listeners of this podcast. If you want to sample the service for 30 days and get yourself one free audio book, got a few days left here in the month of February to jump on this. So audibletrial.com/Sala Monster. You got to sign up for the 30-day trial. Even if you cancel in those 30 days, you get to keep one free book of your choice. So jump on that. Jump on this, too. We've got a t-shirt sale coming up starting tomorrow. That's this Monday in our store on ProWrestlingTees.com. ProWrestlingTees.com/Sala Monster sounds off. It is the new site sale. You might notice that Pro Wrestling Tees has undergone something of a renovation or a revamp. The site looks different, looks new. There's a 20% off sale off all shirts in our store starting this Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern. All you have to do is punch in the code new site, all one word, and you'll get 20% off the brand new shirt in our store, the Always Point to the Sign shirt, which is good for WrestleMania if you guys are going. Just use the promo code new site starting this Monday at 1 Eastern, and the sale runs through this Wednesday also at 1 p.m. Eastern. If you want to become a PayPal VIP, you may do so on thesalamonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. I want to say thank you this week to John Loose Cannon, Lopez, Deadpool, James Herrera, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, the Florida Freebird, Brian Pissera, Out of Control, Cody Thomas, Luis Hercules Hernandez, excuse me, my goodness, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Masgrave, Micah Harshaw, Pull No Punches, Alan Ragasa, the Malaysian Mastermind, Samuel T., the Demon of the Prairies, Scott Silver, Dream Chaser, Chauncey Curry, Gabriel, the San Diego Beer Snob, Solus, Your Girlfriend's Crush, Gary Smith, the Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, the Show-Off, Corey Van Dam, and the Renton Road Warrior. That's right, the Renton Road Warrior, Taylor Schatt, first-time donator, so thank you to him. Thank you to everybody for all of your contributions. So I know a lot of you have been asking me about New Orleans, which is coming up in short order. We're only about, what, 5 weeks away, maybe six, from WrestleMania, and all of the fun and mischief in New Orleans. And we are going to have another Sound Off meetup. We have at least one of these every single year. New Orleans will be no different. Our meetup will be WrestleMania Sunday. So that's Sunday, April 8th, starting at 11 a.m. at Pat O'Brien's on Bourbon Street. Now, there's a Pat O'Brien's bar, and then there's a Pat O'Brien's Courtyard Restaurant. The Courtyard Restaurant, which is actually on the corner of Bourbon Street, on the Bourbon Street side, that's where the meetup will be. It'll be at the restaurant because there's no age limit. So that's why we're going to do it there. There's a nice courtyard area outside. We'll probably go until about 2:30 or so, you know, as people begin to head over to the Superdome, Hogan, not Silverdome. So around that time, people normally start gravitating towards the building. I'll get an invite up on our Facebook page like I always do. I encourage anybody who is thinking about attending, if you might attend, if you're definitely going to attend, please RSVP on Facebook so I can get a sense of headcount. It's not mandatory, but when the invite goes up, please RSVP. There is no cover charge. There is no ticket to buy. It's free for everybody to attend. It's not a live show or anything like that. It's just a pre WrestleMania meetup that Sunday at Pat O'Brien's. Hopefully, if you are in New Orleans, I will see you all there. So, Raw Monday Night was a very interesting show. They took a chance with this gauntlet match concept, and they hit a home run. It worked. They proved me wrong, too, because I've seen these gauntlet matches before in WWE, and this one was worked very differently than the ones that I think we've normally seen in the past. This one had a great story with Seth Rollins going the distance, or at least trying to. He got the people behind him in a way that Vince McMahon, I'm sure, wishes they would get behind Roman Reigns. And this was a Vince McMahon idea. He wanted to do the gauntlet. It was his idea. It worked. So he gets the credit for it. You get the credit for the good, you get the credit for the bad. It also paid off huge in the ratings, too, even against the Olympics. 3.5 million viewers for each of the first 2 hours of Raw, pretty much all of which was the gauntlet match. About an hour and 53 minutes, I think the match went in total, making it the longest match in WWE history. So, it's funny, you know, I see the reaction to this match, and I see the ratings when the ratings, you know, came in. And I just think to myself, like, imagine that, a compelling wrestling match that draws and doesn't turn people away. Believe it or not, they do still exist for all this talk about how people don't like long matches and they want to see entertainment. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, but I think when you have the right story that you're telling, I think without the Rollins story, I don't know that this match would have done so well. I think people were watching as much to see how far Seth Rollins could go than anything else, even though they largely stuck around even after Rollins was eliminated, which is pretty amazing to me. But I think Rollins had as much to do with this as anything. So that's the good news. The bad news is that once the gauntlet ended, the entire match, not just Rollins being eliminated, but once that entire gauntlet match ended at the end of that second hour, they lost 20% of their audience, which made it the single biggest drop from 1 hour to the next in the history of that show. So if Raw was only 2 hours, this show would have been just about flawless. This probably would have gone down in some kind of list as one of the greatest episodes of Raw ever, if the show was only 2 hours. So they departed from their usual formula. They tried something different. I will never fault them for that, even with those crappy graphics on SmackDown that they've been doing. When it first started, I didn't like it then. I don't like it now, but I don't have a problem with them trying new things, right? Whether or not it's going to work out in the end, that's a different story. But I will never fault them for trying something different, because this is not a company that is known for trying, you know, lots of new innovative things. It's a situation where they have their formula, and boy, do they like to stick to it. So they departed from that formula. They tried something different, right even down to the mid-match cut-in promos. Like, as the gauntlet was going on, they cut to Renee Young backstage, and she was interviewing people as they were being picked off and eliminated. And they were treating it like a real sport. It was almost like, you know, interviews that you would see after an Olympic competition or something. Maybe the Olympics has motivated them, I don't know. But even that, like, I'd like to see more of that, too. Now, Seth Rollins was the MVP. We've not seen this version of Seth Rollins for quite a while. He's been doing the tag team thing, first with Dean Ambrose, then with Jason Jordan. It's very easy to forget that Rollins is one of the top, probably, I'd say, two or three in-ring performers in the entire company. I would go AJ Styles 1, Seth Rollins 2, which is why, you know, when I made my roster shakeup suggestions last week, before everybody started throwing out predictions about who's going to go to Raw and SmackDown and all this, you know, last week I suggested swapping AJ Styles for Seth Rollins post-WrestleMania, assuming that there's some kind of a draft or a shakeup or something. That's one move I would consider making. That way both guys have fresh opponents to step into the ring with. I love AJ kind of taking SmackDown as his own. Maybe they could remodel SmackDown around him. They could do that. But as much as I love AJ being on SmackDown, he's done all he can do. You know, once he gets past Nakamura and that whole program, I mean, I guess he still hasn't worked a proper program with Randy Orton, but there really isn't much else for him to do. He's faced almost every key player there is to face. It's time to make some kind of a move, and I think swapping Rollins for AJ would be a pretty even switch, even though I would rank AJ above him, but, and I would love to see that match, by the way, AJ Styles against Seth Rollins. It's a match I'd love to see, but they don't have to be on the same brand. I think they could just use some fresh opponents, and if AJ loses the championship at WrestleMania, he goes to Raw, Rollins goes to SmackDown, He could be the face of SmackDown. You could build around somebody like Seth Rollins. My only criticism is that for all of the effort that Rollins put into this gauntlet, going over an hour, and all of these guys, all the effort that they were putting into this, Finn Balor and all of them, and as important as the announcers were making it out to be as it was happening, there was nothing on the line. And, you know, it's okay to fight for pride and fight for bragging rights, but it just felt like for all of that effort, as long as this match went, there should have been something at stake. I'm watching this thinking, why would Seth Rollins, who wanted so badly to find his way into the Elimination Chamber, which would give him, you know, it would allow him to punch his ticket to Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. So he got added to the Fatal, you know, four-way, which turned into a Fatal five-way, and then you had the controversial finish. So for as much as this guy wants to go to the main event of WrestleMania, you gotta win the chamber first, right? Why would Seth Rollins put himself through the ringer the way he did here 6 days before the chamber and risk injury, risk wearing himself out, with nothing being on the line? It wasn't even like they had already sorted out the whole who's entering first, who's entering last. You couldn't even put that on the line. You know, if it was to determine who's going to enter the chamber last, then okay, sure, that makes sense. Everybody should be clamoring, you know, to enter that match last, but there was nothing on the line. There was nothing at stake. It just felt foolish to me. But that aside, I thought this whole thing was great. Rollins is either the first or second all time in WWE now for the longest match time. He wrestled over an hour straight. Now, I've seen conflicting reports whether he's number one, whether he's number two. This also assumes that you count the gauntlet as one big long match, which I do. Some people don't. I know Rey Mysterio won 62 minutes in his Royal Rumble win back in 2006. But I look at that and I say, first of all, and this goes for any Royal Rumble winner, but like in Rey's case, taking him, you got 29 other guys in that match. Rey spent half that match laying on the ground. I haven't watched that Rumble match in a long time, but the one thing I remember from that match is that he spent a long time, long stretches of time throughout that Rumble match just laying on the ground. So, I was thinking to myself, you know, Shania Twain used to have a song called That Don't Impress Me Much. The only reason I remember that is it came out around the time of the Attitude Era, and all the radio stations here used to play it nonstop when she was, you know, a big deal. So I remember that song, and I think, you know, she made that song specifically for Rey Mysterio's Royal Rumble win. It's true. I mean, even though the song came out almost a decade before, she had a premonition, did Shania Twain. But that's not even the most impressive thing that Rollins did on Monday. He also became the first and only man in history to beat Roman Reigns and John Cena cleanly. Cleanly or otherwise, really. I mean, I don't know that anybody's cheated to beat them both in one night. He did it back-to-back in the same night. The two golden boys of the company, and Rollins beat them both. He's a modern-day Chris Jericho without the cruise ship. And I said this on Twitter. Think about this. This is kind of a crazy... I mean, when you consider his schedule, I guess it's not as crazy, but it's still pretty crazy when you think that Seth Rollins wrestled longer in one match than Brock Lesnar did in all of his pay-per-view matches combined for all of 2017. I actually went back and added them up. He wrestled around 61 minutes total for the year, and Rollins beat him by a few minutes. That is a pretty crazy stat. Rollins went 20 minutes with Roman Reigns. He pinned him with a cradle. He put all of his weight on top of Reigns for the three. Reigns smirked because he knew he got caught. And a loss for him is no big deal because he knows he's facing Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. So, you know, but if he wins the championship, it would put Rollins in line for a shot. So you would hope that they sort of loop back around to that at some point. Although, if they do a roster shakeup, there's no reason for Rollins and Reigns to be on the same roster. There really isn't. So, in the end, it might not mean anything. It's like Triple H beating Steve Austin at No Way Out in the Three Stages of Hell in 2001. What did it mean? All he did was align himself with Austin post-WrestleMania. He should have feuded with him, and instead he ended up being tag team partners with him, so it didn't mean anything. Anyway, Rollins next up beat John Cena. Had an even longer match. This one went over half an hour. This was a pay-per-view caliber match. I mean, really, both matches were pay-per-view caliber. Cena and Rollins had some great matches back in 2015. So we already knew these two worked well together. They have a good chemistry together. Except that one time that Seth Rollins made John Cena's nose try to escape from the rest of his face. So we had a lot of near falls here, which has become a staple of John Cena matches. I mean, I know it happens in most big matches. It's not just a Cena problem. But it just feels like it happens more in John Cena matches. All of the constant near falls. How many attitude adjustments in the course of a match does this guy usually have to hit? I guess you get weaker the older you get. You know, when you hit 40 and above, things become that much harder. It becomes harder to put your opponents away, I guess. So Rollins hit the curb stomp for the win. It really was a hell of a performance by this guy. It ended 8 minutes later for him after Elias hit the drift away and pinned him. People were very upset when that happened. They gave Rollins a standing ovation on his way to the back. Finn Balor was in next. He beat Elias with the coup de grace. Brought out Miz. Miz beat Balor with the skull-crushing finale. Had a little bit of assistance in doing so. And then, this was great. Miz realizes he's got a big smile on his face, but he quickly realizes, oh shit. when he realizes that Braun Strowman is the only man left to come out in this match. And out comes Strowman. I'll say this, it took a lot longer for Strowman to beat Miz than I thought it would. I thought this was going to pretty much end in short order, but they wrestled another 10 or 11 minutes before Strowman finally put him away with the power slam. And the most recent rumor, you know, has that as the match for WrestleMania. It's got Miz defending the Intercontinental Championship against Braun Strowman. So unless Strowman finds his way into the tag match with Ronda Rousey, you know, there really isn't much else for him to do if he's not challenging for the championship, which he should be. I mean, frankly, it's a funny thing, and I don't want this to come across as though I'm just hating on Roman Reigns. I don't like Roman. I don't have a problem with Roman Reigns, and Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar had a really good match back at WrestleMania 31, and I don't doubt that they would have a really good match this time either. But I think right now we're at a point in time, especially after what we saw from Rollins on Monday night, you've got at least two other people on that Raw brand right now who are even more popular than Roman Reigns, at least just going based on crowd reaction, who are every bit as popular and probably way more so than Roman Reigns is right now, who just based on their positioning on the show and or stories or, you know, whatever, seem to be a better, more logical fit to challenge for the championship at WrestleMania. Seth Rollins challenging Brock Lesnar for the championship at WrestleMania, with this being almost like a story of redemption for him. It's been so long since he's been the champion. He's been doing the tag team thing for a while. He had a lot of issues with his last partner. He's been through a lot of crap. The performance on Monday. There's a really good story there that they could tell with Rollins going all the way back and getting back into the WrestleMania main event. On the other hand, you have Braun Strowman, who has come into his own as a top-level main event performer. He comes out every single week. He gets, I mean, no pun intended, he gets a monster pop. People are into him. They haven't tired of him. It's kind of shocking they haven't already put the championship on him. So you have Strowman and Rollins, either of whom I think people would want to see challenge Lesnar for the championship at WrestleMania, but instead, I mean, look, never say never, right? Anything can happen until it happens. But I don't know that there's very many people listening to this podcast right now. As I record this, we are hours away from the pay-per-view. Okay, maybe I'll look foolish when the pay-per-view is over. But I don't think there are very many of you listening to this right now before the pay-per-view who think that anybody but Roman Reigns will actually come out of that chamber as the winner. It could happen, but we all know the chances of that are very slim. It's just the way it is. Vince has had his eye on the prize now for so long with this guy. Everything has been building to Roman and Brock at WrestleMania, but you got two other guys on that roster who I think are getting the shaft if they somehow don't find their way into that WrestleMania main event. Now, kudos to WWE as far as this gauntlet match is concerned. They deserve all the credit in the world for all the bad stuff and all the wrong moves they make. They pulled one out of the hat and they hit a home run this week. I wish Raw could be like that every week. Of course, they can't do a match like that every single week. But it worked. I enjoyed it. And obviously you guys did too, as evidenced by the 78% thumbs up rating that you guys gave the show in our Twitter poll, which for Raw is practically unheard of. Now, the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view is tonight from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. Actually, it's located in Paradise, Nevada. Perhaps somebody who lives there can explain to me the difference between the two, because most people just call it Vegas. But far be it from me to offend any of the locals there, so you can fill me in later on what that's all about. The kickoff match that has been added is Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson challenging Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel of the Miz Farage. I'm going to go with Anderson and Gallows for the win. I think it's the safe bet. We know Ronda Rousey will be on the pay-per-view tonight. She will be officially signing her WWE Raw contract, and I'm sure she'll end up going face-to-face with Stephanie McMahon. She'll probably moderate the whole thing. I guess the only question is, does Stephanie go in for the slap? Does it happen tonight? Does it happen, you know, on Raw Monday night? I don't know. I would think that if she doesn't get the slap off, she'll attempt one tonight. Maybe Ronda will block it or something. I think something's going down between those two tonight. I'm most interested in what kind of reaction she gets in Vegas. She's had many fights there. In fact, her last fight was in Vegas over a year ago. Now, she got booed when Kurt Angle mentioned her name a few weeks ago on TV. So I'm most interested in what type of reaction Rousey gets out there in Vegas. She was seen training at the Performance Center this past week. We'll see if she does anything physical. My wager would be yes, even if it's just something minor. Sheamus and Cesaro defend their Raw Tag Team titles against Titus O'Neil and Apollo, Don't Call Me Cruz. The gunman in the Florida school massacre has the last name Cruz, and WWE did not want to draw attention to that, so they decided to lop off this guy's last name. Almost as stupid as the idiots who blame video games for school shootings. Titus and Apollo, they've already gotten a few shock wins on TV, including last Monday, to build to what really is just a filler defense, I think, for Sheamus and Cesaro, just to get them to WrestleMania. So Sheamus and Cesaro will retain. Bray Wyatt will take on Woken Matt Hardy. This is the second straight feud now for Bray Wyatt that has bored me to tears. First it was Finn Balor. He almost destroyed Finn Balor. Thank God for Finn, they got out of that. So that was boring me to tears. That was before the mumps spared us from having to endure the sight of Wyatt dressed in drag. And now this. Now this feud with Broken Matt, Woken Matt, Token Matt, whatever the hell you want to call him. My only hope is that it pays off with some sort of gimmick match from the Hardy compound, or something in the same vein as Final Deletion. Something creative like that. Otherwise, this has been a gigantic waste of time. So I'm going to go ahead and predict that Woken Matt gets a much-needed win with an assist from the returning Jeff Hardy as Brother Nero. Asuka takes on Nia Jax. If Nia wins, not only is Asuka's win streak deleted, Nia will be added to the women's title match at WrestleMania. Somebody had the bright idea on Monday night. As great as the gauntlet was, those first 2 hours, it was so great. But then there was an hour left in the show. And the first thing they do coming out of the gauntlet was they say, let's have an in-ring interview with Asuka. And not just, you know, an in-ring interview. Obviously, English is not her first language. Her, more so than most, probably needs the scripting that they love doing so much on Raw with these promos. So they have the bright idea of sending Asuka, of all people, out there to do, I wouldn't call it a long promo, but a more involved promo than she's probably normally accustomed to doing, a scripted promo in the middle of the ring. And what happened? She forgot her lines. And she froze. And time stood still. I'm sure for her it felt like an hour. It was only about 10 seconds or so. But boy, was this bad. Boy, was this bad. Yeah, it's funny, I when I hear people talk about Paul Heyman and what a great promoter he was and all the, you know, there's a lot of pros and cons to Paul Heyman. I'm sure you can get an equal number of ECW talent from back then to talk, you know, they scammed them out of money and all this stuff. But, you know, creatively, Heyman had a knack for exploiting people's strengths and hiding their weaknesses. And when you have somebody like Asuka or you have somebody like Shinsuke Nakamura, who they know basic English, but their English is not as strong as it would be for most everybody else on the roster. So now they're in, you know, a position where Asuka's going to go challenge for the championship at WrestleMania, most likely. And, well, I guess she is. It's just a matter of which one. But Nakamura's going to go to WrestleMania to challenge for the championship. against AJ Styles. They're in prominent positions on the show. You can't necessarily hide them, although that's what they're seemingly doing with Nakamura on SmackDown, and thank God for that, because if ever there was a time to hide him from that the stink of that show, this is it. But it's not their strong suit, and you can't put them out there and just script this garbage for them and not expect something like this to happen. I don't know why you would even want to put her in this position in the first place. She doesn't have to go out there and say a whole hell of a lot. She's got a couple of catchphrases. You know, she can speak volumes by just looking into the camera. She's got great facial expressions and mannerisms and everything else. You can find ways around having her go out there and, you know, speak for minutes at a time. So she forgot her lines. It happens, but it was pretty embarrassing. And I would not be putting her in that kind of position right now. She doesn't have to say a lot. She's not the kind of person that has to go out there and say a whole hell of a lot. Now, Nia Jax attacked her. Probably felt sorry for her, so she attacked her from behind, or tried to. Asuka fought back, but in the end, she got laid out. This was a mercy killing. I call this a mercy killing. They were very careful on Monday not to say Raw women's title match when it came to Asuka going into WrestleMania. Even Asuka in her awful promo did not mention the championship match at WrestleMania as being for the Raw women's title. They just said women's title. So I predict the streak lives on. She beats Nia, probably with an accidental, we'll call it accidental assist from Alexa Bliss, Nia's supposed best friend. And Asuka ends up challenging Charlotte. I think that's always been the match. I think that's the right match. I think they're doing their best, being very coy about things, thinking they're going to swerve us. In the end, I mean, I don't know that very many of us are going to be swerved or surprised when Asuka ends up cashing in against Charlotte. And we'll find out on TV sometime this week. I think she'll make her intentions to challenge Charlotte very clear. We have the first ever Women's Elimination Chamber match for the Raw Women's Championship. Alexa Bliss defends against Sasha Banks, Bayley, Mickey James, Mandy Rose, and Sonya Deville. I think Little Miss Bliss, as they call her, is keeping her championship. The smallest of the women in the chamber ekes out a win. There's always a chance Sasha could win or Bayley could win, and then, you know, if, let's say, Sasha wins, Bayley challenges her for the championship, or if Bayley wins, Sasha challenges her for the championship. I don't see that happening, though. I see the two of them having a separate match at WrestleMania. I think this Sasha-Bayley thing is obviously going somewhere, but I don't think it has to be for the championship. So, I think in this chamber match, I think those two effectively cancel one another out. Mickey, Mandy, and Sonya, I just don't see any of them. I mean, Mickey has a better chance than Sonya or Mandy, but I don't see any of those three walking out with the championship. I think, and that leaves Alexa. And Alexa can then defend against Nia Jax. Now, Nia can lose to Asuka, but redeem herself by getting a championship match and then probably beating Alexa to become the new champion at WrestleMania. And then we have the first ever men's Elimination Chamber match for the right to challenge Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship at WrestleMania. Roman Reigns, John Cena, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, Braun Strowman, The Miz, who is entering first, and Elias, who is entering last. I feel like the outcome of this match really was never in doubt going back, I mean, even 6 months or whatever it was when I first said that Roman was going to win the chamber. There were a lot of people who were saying Roman's going to win the Rumble. And I, you know, my attitude about that was, he better not. I can't say for sure that he won't, but I said it doesn't make any sense that you would put him in the same position in the same city and have a repeat of what happened in 2015. Why would you want that? That does Roman Reigns no favors at all. So I never thought that he was going to end up being booed out of Philly again, winning the Rumble for the second time. I think second time. I said there's no reason to do it. Now he'll be booed out of Vegas. It won't be Philly, it'll be Vegas instead. But just have him win the chamber. Let somebody else go over in the Rumble and let Roman win the chamber. And that's where we are. It's going to be Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns in New Orleans, barring any unforeseen circumstances. I know this Richard Rodriguez stuff bubbled up again this week. He claims he has evidence to prove that he was selling steroids to Roman Reigns. He was selling performance-enhancing drugs and drugs that really aren't even meant to be consumed by human beings. Horse steroids, whatever it is. This is the claim. I'm not giving this story any more oxygen. You notice I've not really talked a lot about this story. I'm not giving this story any more oxygen than it deserves until this guy provides some concrete evidence of wrongdoing on Roman's part. Even just the idea that Roman Reigns bought steroids, he's a wrestler. You think he's the only one? Because if you do, you're being naive. Now, if he can provide receipts or emails or evidence that Roman knew him, did business with him, that's not good for Roman Reigns. And I said this when Roman put that statement out through WWE all those weeks ago. He didn't have to say shit. Or he could have kept it very vague. And instead, he went above and beyond. He went one step farther and he said, not only is this all not true and blah, 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 but I've never even met. I don't even know who this guy is. I forgot exactly how he phrased it, but he pleaded ignorance to even knowing who this guy is. And I said to myself, boy, he better hope that that's the case, because if anything comes out at all linking him to this guy, all of a sudden Roman's credibility goes down the toilet. Anything he says becomes that much more difficult to believe, because if he would lie about this, then why wouldn't he lie about that? So for his sake, hopefully he was telling the truth. And he's never done business with this guy, he's never met him, you know, because all it takes is this guy providing, you know, written evidence of it, or a photograph of the two of them shaking hands, or something like that, and all of a sudden Roman's credibility goes up in smoke. But until I see actual concrete proof of anything, this is a non-story. This means nothing. This certainly does not change Roman's quest or his path to WrestleMania. But we'll see. He claims, I think, this week there may be a new video coming out. We'll see what he has. But I'm tired. It's like I keep hearing, oh, I've got, there's stuff, there's evidence, there's stuff. Really? Where is it? Put your cards out on the table. You know, there's an expression, shit or get off the pot. I mean, enough beating around the bush. You either have evidence or you don't. When he does, I'll talk about it. Otherwise, this has no bearing on Roman Reigns going to WrestleMania. Even still, with the outcome being predictable, this should be a hell of a match tonight, given all the talent involved. And now you got seven guys instead of six. Roman, Seth, Balor, I mean, there's a lot of really good talent in this match. I'm sure we'll get the Elias concert. You know, Braun Strowman is going to wreck shit, which is always fun. Rollins is going to work his ass off. This should easily be the best thing on the entire show, which is not saying much when you look at this card. This is not a card that has a whole lot of depth to it. But last year's Chamber match, I put last year's Chamber match in my top 10 matches of 2017. That was the match where Bray Wyatt won the WWE title, which feels like a lifetime ago at this point. But that was maybe my favorite Elimination Chamber match to date. That's how much I like that match. If they could even come close to topping that this year, then we're going to have a match of the year candidate. Jeff Jarrett was officially added to the class of 2018 for the WWE Hall of Fame this past week. I talked about this. This was a rumor last week. Rumor became reality on Monday night. I really didn't think it was going to happen this soon. I knew it was inevitable. A lot of these guys are going to end up at some point in the Hall of Fame. I did not think it was going to happen this year, and so quickly after he got out of rehab. The absolute best moment that you probably missed on Monday, because I did in my first viewing, was after they finished airing the video package, the Hall of Fame video for Jarrett, they cut to the crowd for a reaction, and, you know, he got mild applause. And in the front row, it was very brief, but in the front row, they show this woman who turns to her husband, boyfriend, kidnapper, whatever, and you can see her mouth the words, "Who the fuck is that?" I didn't see it right away. Somebody posted video of it online. That's the best camera work from Kevin Dunn and his crew all year. Was getting that woman on screen asking, "Who the fuck is this goofy country singer and why does he spell his name out like that?" This woman, just the way she turns and just says it was just priceless. So they fed the news, WWE did, to NBCSports.com, which broke the story on Monday. See, he's not even good enough for them to give it to ESPN. They had to go one level down and give it to NBC Sports. And in the announcement on WWE.com, it's comical how they have to go out of their way not to mention the initials TNA or mention the name Impact Wrestling. when they get to Jarrett's post-WWE career. This is what they said. They say, Jarrett continued to compete around the world and also began to promote shows that gave future WWE stars like AJ Styles, Bobby Roode, and Eric Young their first major exposure. Interesting they would say Eric Young and not Samoa Joe. But yes, apparently, you know, Jeff Jarrett was an independent wrestling promoter. Apparently so. I don't know. Look, the whole thing is just silly to me. It's not like they haven't mentioned TNA, like the TNA initials, on their own network, on some of their DVDs. They even interviewed Dixie Carter for I think, the Kurt Angle special, right? Yet on their website or on television, mainly on television, it's like a completely different set of rules. Like, if they say it, it releases the Kraken or something like that. Like Beetlejuice. Say Beetlejuice's name three times and he appears. Maybe they're afraid if they say TNA three times, Vince Russo might appear. Yet they have no problem on TV mentioning that AJ Styles was an IWGP champion. That's what JBL wouldn't shut up about that when Styles first came in. I just think their rules, their little rules that they have, are just so weird and so inconsistent. One person who I know is just thrilled to hear that Jeff Jarrett is Hall of Fame bound is Rebbie Hardy. She said that she's very pleased that she will be in the same room with him that night. She says, ask anyone if I've ever backed down from a beef. Might get my ass kicked, but I don't let shit go. Well, that is true. That is true. She does seem to carry a grudge. I hope they put the camera on her just so we can see her facial expressions when he's up there on stage singing With My Baby Tonight with Road Dogg. Because you know they will. You know that they're going to sing that song together on stage at some point. Speaking of Road Dogg, that brings me to SmackDown Live. SmackDown was live from the Talking Stick Arena in Phoenix this past Tuesday. They were at the Talking Stick on Monday, too. That's a lot of talking. Twitter poll, over 2,000 votes. The highest for a SmackDown show in quite a while, and also the worst thumbs up rating the show has gotten in a very long time. Only 35% of you voted thumbs up on this show. 65% of you gave it a thumbs down. This show is terrible right now. SmackDown is awful. It is boring. There is no life to it. It's the same matches or different variations of the same matches over and over and over again. AJ Styles is the only saving grace of this show. And the ratings for this show, on average, are up from where they were with Jinder Mahal as WWE champion. How this show is even doing the numbers it's doing is an amazing feat all by itself. This Shane McMahon, Daniel Bryan nonsense drags on. Hey, Shane, I made a match. Oh, hey, Daniel. Well, that match kind of sucks. I made this match instead. Well, I kind of disagree with you on that, Shane, but hey, you're the boss. That's right, Daniel. I am the boss. Cue awkward staring for 11 seconds and then fade to the next segment. There, I just saved you the trouble of watching SmackDown this Tuesday. My apologies for the spoiler. Kevin Owens against Dolph Ziggler and AJ Styles against Baron Corbin were the two feature matches on this show. Ziggler had the match well in hand when Sami Zayn, very angry about his loss to Ziggler the week before, bolted down to the ring in the middle of this match. Not before his theme music played, of course, because without it, he would be lost. But instead of sliding into the ring, Sami stopped just short, and Owens was able to super kick Ziggler right in the back of the head, and he pinned him. What a dweeb. What a dweeb. And Corey Graves blames Ziggler for the loss on commentary for not paying attention, and he was 100% right. He got exactly what he deserved. Jinder Mahal and the healthy Singh brother came out for a promo. This segment sucked the life force out of me. And can somebody explain to me what the hell is wrong with Jinder's voice? At first I thought he was just losing his voice one week or he had a cold or something. That was 6 months ago. He still sounds the same. Something's wrong with this guy. Jinder claimed that he somehow had gained possession of Bobby Roode's own personal top 10 list. And now they have the SmackDown top 10, right? So Jinder said, well, I got a copy of Bobby Roode's personal top 10 list. I thought this was going to be a comedy sketch, like an old Letterman top 10 or something, but it was just a regular top 10 list. with Bobby Roode ranked at number one. Roode came out, he claimed that he had no idea where that list was from. That's a fraudulent list, it's not mine. I already hate this top 10 gimmick. It only took 3 weeks. I despise it already. This was designed to drive a further wedge between Bobby Roode and Randy Orton because Randy Orton wasn't even on Roode's fake top 10 list. Orton came out, he decked Jinder. And when he decked Jinder, I'm watching this and I'm thinking, oh my god. We're having another feud here involving Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal. It's like a nightmare all over again. This time Bobby Roode's involved, but this is a three-way feud. Technically, Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal are once again in a program feuding on television. And you say there's no problems with SmackDown. I mean, I don't know anybody personally who would say that, but you know there are people out there who think everything is just fine. Everything is just hunky-dory with this show. This is great. Because the one last year, right? The program and the feud between them last year set the world on fire. Didn't set anything on fire. Wanted me to set my TV on fire. But that's about it. Roode then knocked Jinder out of the ring. Orton went for an RKO. Roode blocked it, hit him with the glorious DDT. Roode went to go pose when Jinder snuck up behind him and laid him out with the Coloss. This sucked. And as if that wasn't bad enough, we then cut to Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon. Oscar and Felix over here. Bryan believed that Jinder should be next in line for a shot at Bobby Roode's United States Championship at Fastlane. That right there ought to be grounds for impeachment. Shane countered that with Randy Orton. Randy Orton is the one who tried to answer Bobby Roode's open challenge last week. That's the match that everybody wants to see, and so that should be the match at Fastlane. Who is this everybody that Shane speaks of? I'd like to know. Is he some new executive that WWE just hired? If I go on the corporate website, can I find a bio for this everybody? Bryan said, every decision I make is met with resistance. Shane said, well, that's because you make decisions based on emotion. Orton against Roode is a better choice. That's the match at Fastlane and my decision is final. To which Bryan replied, whatever you want, boss. Whatever you want, boss. And he walked away. This was every Shane McMahon, Daniel Bryan segment that I feel like we've seen on this show now for at least 4 or 5 months. Nothing ever really changes. The names change. The matches change. Nothing else ever really changes. And at this point, I've given up hope that we are, in fact, going to get some kind of a match between them. At least there would be some kind of a decent payoff. It's very apparent to me now that that will not happen. And I just don't know what to make of any of this. Now, if this was compelling television, and I didn't know where it was going, I would be a lot happier. I'd be looking forward to seeing where exactly this ends up going. But it's painful. At this point, it's painful to follow this along every single week. I don't see any payoff to this that could possibly make all of this worth it. I'll be the first one to admit I was wrong if they do, but I don't see that happening. Speaking of deja vu, that brings us to the Riot Squad against Charlotte, Becky Lynch, and Naomi. Naomi hit a cool dive out to the floor at one point, wiped out the entire Riot Squad. That was the coolest thing that happened the entire match. Becky came in, she was suplexing people around like she was Taz back in 1998. She had Ruby in the disarmer, Liv Morgan broke it up. SmackDown Liv, Corey Graves said at one point. I cringed. Things broke down with everybody hitting moves. Becky suplexed Sarah Logan, but then she got caught with a Riot kick and pinned. And so Ruby will challenge Charlotte for the Women's Championship on the Fastlane card, in fact. Backstage, Sami Zayn told Kevin Owens he wants to be his guardian angel. And at the pay-per-view, he will do the right thing. He will lay down for Kevin Owens in the center of the ring. What an exciting way to build to the main event of your next pay-per-view. Tease that one of the participants is going to lay down for the other man and let him pin him to win the championship. Feel the excitement. The New Day, who now have giant colorful letters superimposed onto the screen during their entrance, in case we already don't know the words to their shtick, now we can't forget. They beat Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin to become number one contenders for the SmackDown Tag Team titles. They will meet the Usos at Fastlane. And I fully expect that's going to change. It's going to end up being a three-way with the Bludgeon Brothers, or a four-way with the Bludgeon Brothers and Gable and Benjamin. They can somehow work their way back. They have time. They can still worm their way back into the tag team title picture. So I don't see it staying two-on-two for very long. I'm sure there'll be a backstage debate between Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan that ends with Shane overruling Bryan and making it a multi-team match. Bludgeon Brothers did walk right past New Day on their way to the back, or as the Bludgeon Brothers were coming to the ring for a squash, so a little bit of foreshadowing there. AJ Styles and Baron Corbin. There were two great spots here in this match that I really liked. One was Corbin tossing AJ over the announcers. They just flung him right over the announce desk, and Styles landed on his feet. Very quickly jumped up onto the apron, hit a forearm over the ropes for a near fall. Not quite a phenomenal forearm. It was missing the springboard, so I guess we'll call it a pretty good forearm, not quite phenomenal. The other spot was Corbin hitting maybe the best deep six I've ever seen on AJ Styles, and this was all AJ. This was all AJ spun around about half a dozen times before he finally hit the mat. Styles won with the real phenomenal forearm. Owens and Zayn jumped him after the match. Corbin laid them both out, both heels out, with the End of Days. The main event was pretty good. It's the rest of the show that really soured me on SmackDown this week, but this is not a problem limited to just one week. And I see some people also complaining about Rusev being MIA the last couple of weeks. Nakamura is nowhere to be found on this show, and yet he's challenging for the championship of WrestleMania. Rusev even posted a tweet. He was mocking what Shane McMahon said on TV a couple of weeks ago when the crowd erupted into chants of Rusev Day as Shane was speaking, and Shane went, "Duly noted." Remember that? Apparently Shane doesn't, because I don't think Rusev's been on the show since. Now Nakamura, on the other hand, I think we should be thankful that he hasn't been part of this show lately. I don't want him anywhere near this show until after Fastlane. After Fastlane, you could start promoting the match with him and AJ and put him on TV. Until then, I don't want him on this show. I want him as far away from this show as possible. Mixed Match Challenge, Week 6. I'm still following along. Bobby Roode and Charlotte, the Robe Warriors, as they call themselves, against Apollo, Don't Call Me Cruz, and Nia Jax was the match this past week. Nia did not get along with Dana Brooke and Titus O'Neil, who were outside the ring. She also gave us one of the funnier moments of the match, when Nia yelled over at Bobby Roode on the apron and called him old. I forgot exactly how she said it. It may have been something like, "Shut your old ass up." Roode is 40. Nia is 33. I'm not calling Nia old. I'm older than Nia, so if she's old, that means I'm old, and I'm not ready to admit that. But she's not too far off. She'll get there soon enough. Charlotte hit a moonsault on Nia. Her form was excellent. Her landing, not so much. I think she was trying not to hit Roode and Apollo with her legs on the way down. They were also in the ring. Roode finished off Apollo with the glorious DDT for the win. After the match, Roode did a very poor Ric Flair woo. I thought Kurt Angle had the worst woo in wrestling. That award now goes to Bobby Roode. Nia then took the mic, ran down Titus, ran down Dana Brooke, laid out Dana with a Samoan drop. The quarterfinals begin this Tuesday with Finn Balor and Sasha Banks taking on Miz and Asuka. Charlotte and Roode will meet Rusev and Lana in 2 weeks. Speaking of Rusev and Lana, what is it going to take to show Shane McMahon the power of Rusev Day? He ought to take a look at these mixed match challenge numbers. I went on their Facebook page. I looked at the total number of views to date per episode for all the, I think, 6 shows so far. They generally range from about 1.8 million to 2 million views. This week's show, for example, has done 2.7 million views. Maybe it's a little higher by now. I looked this up a couple days ago. But then there's the episode from a few weeks back with Rusev and Lana against Elias and Bayley. 4.5 million views. What more evidence do you need? Push this man. Do something with this man. Yet he hasn't been on television for 2 weeks. 205 Live, the tournament bracket has been released for the Cruiserweight Championship Tournament. Cedric Alexander will meet TJP. The winner of that will meet the winner of the Roderick Strong-Kalisto match. On the other side of the bracket, Buddy Murphy, who debuted on this week's show with a win over Arya Daivari, will meet Mustafa Ali, who himself beat Jack Gallagher on the show this week. And then the winner of that will meet the winner of the Drew Gulak-Mark Andrews match, which is coming up. So a lot of great talent involved here. Murphy looked good in his debut. This was his 205 Live debut this past week. The crowd seemed to be into him. His finish is pretty cool, too. It's a move I don't think I've ever seen before. It starts out as a fisherman buster into a almost like a quick angle slam. It's called the Whale Hunt, although he may end up giving it his own name. Between the video packages and the match here, Murphy has come off as more of a star on this show in just the last 2 weeks than he did in all 5 years that he spent in NXT. Jack Gallagher against Mustafa Ali. This match right here is up there with Monday's Gauntlet match and the Gargano-Almas match on NXT as potential match of the week. That's how good this match was. It also had one of the scariest spots I've ever seen. Ali was climbing the turnbuckles when Gallagher drop-kicked him off the ropes, and it sent Ali flying backwards, off the ropes, out of the ring, at full speed, with no one there to break his fall, except the barricade. He smacked right into the barricade. Head first, too. His head whiplashed off it. Looked nasty as all hell. Gallagher worked over Ali's arm for a good part of the match. It even played into another scary spot later on, where Mustafa Ali went for a corkscrew dive out over the top rope, but he couldn't get the full rotation on the dive because of the bum arm that he was selling, and he splatted on the ground. Completely missed Gallagher, and just fell straight down and splattered all over the ground. Ali did get the win with his inverted 450 to advance in the tournament. Mustafa Ali, the more I watch this guy, it becomes very apparent to me that he is one of the most underrated talents, I think, in the entire company. That includes Raw, SmackDown, Cruiserweight Division. I'll even throw NXT in there. NXT has a lot of really talented guys. I would hardly call them underrated, but I feel like this guy falls under the radar, probably largely because he is a smaller guy who's on 205 Live. He's really good. He really is. He's really good. Part of it is that 205 Live stigma. Hopefully that'll start to change, though, now that the show is under new management. But he's a special talent. Him and Buddy Murphy, I think, could actually have an incredible match.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT, William Regal has announced the return of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic after taking a year off. Triple H sure does love his tournaments lately, doesn't he? This one kicks off next week on the March 7th episode with the winners getting an NXT Tag Team title match against Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly at TakeOver New Orleans. The brackets are as follows. Street Profits take on Heavy Machinery, with the winners facing either Sanity or the team of Riddick Moss and Tino Sabatelli. I guess they're not broken up yet. We'll see if they end up breaking up after this tournament. On the other side of the bracket, TM61 takes on the Authors of Pain in a rematch from the finals of the last Dusty Classic in 2016. AOP won that match, which is one of the reasons I don't see them winning this time. Plus, I just think AOP any day now can be called up to the main roster. So there's no real reason for them to win this or go to the finals again or anything like that. The winner of that match will meet the winner of the Oney Lorcan Danny Burch versus Mustache Mountain match. Mustache Mountain being the team of Trent Seven and Tyler Bate. I think if I had to make a prediction, I think it comes down to TM61 against the Street Profits, with TM61 going over and challenging for the titles in New Orleans. They seem to be getting the big push coming out of their return recently. Velveteen Dream got a win over No Way Jose with the Purple Rainmaker elbow. I'll say I was hoping that we might get an odd couple team in this Dusty Classic with Velveteen Dream and Aleister Black. I pitched that idea months ago, and I still feel like that would be pretty entertaining to watch. But sadly, it did not happen. I wouldn't expect them to win the tournament or anything like that, or even go to the finals, because obviously Aleister is going to challenge, I'm sure, for the championship. But I still say there's potential there for an odd couple tag team. Maybe one day on the main roster. Maybe they could save it for the main roster. One day we'll get Aleister Black and the Velveteen Dream. Nikki Cross here on the show got a win over Vanessa Bourne. That led us to the main event. Gargano Almas 4 for the NXT Championship. Johnny Gargano loses. The stipulation says that he must leave NXT. Zelina Vega got involved early, so Candice LeRae took her out with a suicide dive, beat her up all the way to the back. We didn't see them again for the rest of the match. It was a great spot where Gargano did his slingshot into the ring that he does. Normally it's a slingshot into a spear. He did the slingshot, and Almas countered it and caught him on the way down with an armbar. Later on, Almas accidentally back-elbowed the referee and knocked him out. That paved the way for the Gargano escape. When that rat bastard, Tommaso Ciampa, limped into the ring and whacked Gargano again with his crutch across the back, Almas hit the hammerlock DDT, scored the pin to retain the title, and with that, Johnny Gargano's NXT career is over. He got a standing ovation on his way to the back, and as the show went off the air, we get this great shot of Tommaso Ciampa in the crowd waving goodbye to his former tag team partner. Their match in New Orleans is going to be so sick. That may end up being the match of the weekend that I'm looking forward to the most. I'll lump that in there even with AJ and Nakamura and all those matches at WrestleMania. That's the one, I think. Gargano and Ciampa, which I'm sure is the direction. That's the match I'm looking forward to the most. Now, I still would have done a mixed tag with Gargano and Candice beating Almas and Vega. I mean, Johnny just keeps losing to this guy, at least in like a mixed tag match. Maybe he can get a win. You know, you kill 1 week by doing the mixed tag. That gets the women involved. It could probably be a fun match. So the babyfaces win, and that then earns Gargano a championship match, and then they could do exactly what they did here and have, you know, Ciampa come in, hit him with the crutch, cost him the title. That then leads to a match between them at the TakeOver show WrestleMania weekend. Now they have to find their way around the whole loser leaves town stipulation, which I'm sure will come down to a matter of William Regal probably saying that due to the interference of Tommaso Ciampa, it wasn't fair to Johnny Gargano, and so either he's reinstated or we're going to give him a chance to be reinstated. I'm sure it'll end up being something along those lines. I just didn't think the stipulation was needed. But we'll see. We have to wait and see now how it all plays out. Kairi Sane is going to be taking on Shayna Baszler this Wednesday on NXT. Speaking of Kairi, sad tweet this week goes to @FLWrestlingFan on Twitter. He was in attendance for the NXT live event in St. Petersburg, Florida this past Thursday and tweeted this about a couple of jackasses in the crowd. This is what he said. Douchebag saying happy ending and Pearl Harbor at Kairi Sane should be removed from the facility, their tickets should be confiscated, and their credit card should be blocked from buying future tickets. There's another Twitter user who was in attendance, @NerdXFerguson. He had this to say. To the guy who yelled, "Remember Pearl Harbor," toward Kairi Sane at NXT St. Petersburg, I would like to meet you outside and personally show you how we treat women, let alone Japanese women. You're a piece of shit, and I will spit in your face. Not the best phrasing on that tweet, since it reads like this guy enjoys spitting in the face of Japanese women. Which, if that's his fetish, to each their own. But I assume that's not what he meant to say. But, yeah, I saw those tweets, and I heard the reports about people chanting racist crap at Kairi Sane. What pathetic pile of waste pays money for a ticket to chant racist garbage at Kairi Sane. Like, now Kairi, to her credit, you know, she saw the tweets that people were posting and she responded with an illustration of kids from all over the world holding hands. You know, it's unfair. It would be very unfair, I think, to paint with too broad of a brush here. Most of the folks at these shows, I'm sure, are fine people, and they're the NXT hardcores. You know, when they run that Florida circuit, they do their loop at St. Petersburg and all these other different places, really all over the Florida area, all over the state, and they get 200 people, maybe 500, 300. It's probably a lot of the same people. It's a lot of the hardcore fans who go to these shows, and I'm sure most of them are well-behaved, and most of them respect the talent, and if they chant stuff, it's nothing that, you know, would be out of the ordinary that you would hear people chanting at a wrestling event. And in this case, it was probably a handful of people, if that, who were probably dropped on their head one too many times as a kid. Let's jump into your mailbag questions. Again, if anybody is interested in a mailbag sponsorship, any other business inquiries, feel free to direct emails to me, thesolemnmonster@gmail.com. That's also the place where you can send in your questions. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. We'll start out here with JT. Could all of this hype we've heard for the last year for Roman and Brock at WrestleMania turn into one giant swerve? What do you think of Finn Balor winning the Elimination Chamber? He was the first Universal Champion, but had to relinquish the belt after one day due to injury. Then he comes back and kind of flourishes in obscurity for a while, and then goes on to have a stellar performance in the Chamber. Racks up multiple wins, pinning Roman in the end. He then goes on to WrestleMania to slay the Beast and get back the title that he never lost. I'm with you on this. It is stupid that Balor still hasn't gotten his rematch for the championship, being that he never did lose it. They've mentioned it on commentary a few times, but they never actually went back and revisited that and had Balor on TV. Balor, if I'm Finn Balor, I'm standing in the middle of the ring holding that show hostage until I get what I want, which is a championship match. He was screwed out of a championship match. This guy has been feuding with Bray Wyatt and Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas, and only recently are they finally, you know, doing more with him, and they've linked him up now with Anderson and Gallows, and that's cool and all, but if I'm him, you know, if I'm that character, I don't know why he's not more forceful about getting a championship match. Maybe he doesn't care. He's on television every week smiling. Maybe he just doesn't give a shit. So I'm with you on that. Where you lose me is everything else that you just said. The idea that WWE is going to swerve everyone into thinking that Roman Reigns is going to the main event of WrestleMania, only to slot Finn Balor in there, is pretty hilarious. That is pretty funny. I don't know if you've been drinking, perhaps. If you've been indulging in some narcotics, I don't know. But no, I don't think it's a swerve. And I think after Roman wins the championship, they could do a program with Balor. They could finally pull their head out of their ass and have him, you know, show some desire to want to get back the belt that he lost. But I think it's unlikely that he's going to win it there either, even if they do Balor and Roman. Believe me, I think if Roman gets the belt at WrestleMania, he's not dropping it for a while. I don't want to sit here and say he's going to have a year-long reign. I don't think he will, but he ain't losing it to Finn Balor. If they do feud after WrestleMania, it's just not going to happen. And it'll probably be, if anybody gets first dibs, it's probably going to be Seth Rollins, unless they move him over to SmackDown, which I think they should do. Rick from Tacoma, Washington. John Cena still prominently is advertised for Fastlane. How likely do you think it is that after being knocked out of contention for the Universal title in the Elimination Chamber, he will exercise his right through his free agent status to hop over to SmackDown and lobby for Shinsuke Nakamura to put up his WrestleMania title shot at Fastlane? I love the idea of desperate John Cena. Like, here's a guy who lost in the Royal Rumble match. He lost in the Gauntlet on Monday night to Seth Rollins. He loses, let's say, in the Elimination Chamber. So he jumps over to SmackDown to challenge Nakamura, and he loses again. Maybe he could walk out on TV the week after that all disheveled because he's got no match at WrestleMania. And that's when we hear the gong and The Undertaker appears, even though I don't want to see The Undertaker in the ring anymore. And then Cena can finally get his big win, finally, at WrestleMania. And The Undertaker can call it a career. If they can get Samoa Joe back in time for WrestleMania, I would much rather see them build up a Joe-Cena match for Mania this year than Undertaker-Cena. I really hope Joe can make it. That would suck. You know, he has yet to appear at a WrestleMania. This would be the second year in a row that he would have missed the show if he can't make it because of the foot injury. Last year, they just left him off the show. He wasn't hurt. they just didn't have him on the show. I was shocked because at the time, he was almost like a hired gun in a way for Triple H. He was feuding with Rollins, trying to soften Rollins up before his match with Triple H at WrestleMania. I thought at the very least, Joe would do a run-in. Maybe he would be in Triple H's corner as his heavy, but no, he just wasn't there. So I really hope he can make it onto the show this year. He was on fire. He was on a roll for a while. And then the foot injury happened in a random 2-minute match on TV with Titus O'Neil, of all things. He's got 5 or 6 weeks to heal up. But from what I understand, those injuries are tough. You can't do anything. It's a slow process. And Some people heal quicker than others, and I hope for his sake he can make it back in time. Even if it's a last-minute thing and he's a surprise entry in the Andre Battle Royal, which if he is, he has to win. Let him win the whole thing. But hopefully he's back with enough time to actually have a feature match on the show. Brian from Virginia, do you think WWE should have Braun Strowman win the championship at WrestleMania instead of Roman Reigns? I don't think Roman really needs it, but I think Strowman does. I think he needs the title to get him over as a true main eventer. What are your thoughts? I disagree with you 100% on that last point. I don't think Braun Strowman needs any championship to prove his main event status. He has been a main eventer. He has been a headliner for months. The people have taken to him. They have accepted him in that role. He comes out every week. He gets a monster reaction because it's such an easy thing. He's a big guy who breaks shit and beats the hell out of people. What's not to like? I mean, they have him go over the top and do goofy stuff sometimes with these stunts. But it's a very simple formula, and it works. And Braun is a talented guy. He's very quick for a guy that big. He, you know, every time he goes out there, he's learning and he's improving because this is still very new to him. He really hasn't been doing this for a very long time at all. The fact that he's taken to it as quickly as he has is pretty impressive. But this idea that he needs the championship to get him over as a true main eventer, the guy's already over. He doesn't necessarily need the championship. I think he should get it, but does he need it to prove his main event status? No. No, he's already proven his main event status. He doesn't need a championship to tell me that this guy belongs in the main event. Now, do I think that they should have Braun take the championship instead of Roman? This goes to what I was saying earlier when I was talking about Raw. They're in a very weird spot right now. Because while Roman Reigns is a big star, and Roman Reigns has his fans, and the girls go wild for him, you've got two other babyfaces on that same show right now, who, in my opinion, would be a better fit for the championship match against Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Seth Rollins, especially coming out of that gauntlet, there's a great story to be told about a guy who has been out of the title picture for a long time, and is trying so hard to get that championship back, and he's on the cusp of being able to do so. All he has to do is win the chamber. He had a hell of a performance in that gauntlet on Raw last Monday. And if Jason Jordan is out of the picture for WrestleMania, and that's not just part of the storyline, there isn't a whole lot left for Rollins to do. Except, you know, a match with Kurt Angle that they could probably put together. But Rollins, I think, would be a fine challenger for Brock Lesnar, and there's a great story. And then you have Braun. And there's a lot of people who are shocked, and I count myself among them, that they haven't already pulled the trigger and put the championship on this guy, you know, months ago. But Vince has had his story. We've got to keep the title on Brock. Roman has to slay the beast. They've been protecting the F5. Nobody kicks out of it. He hits one of them and gets the pin. Why do you think that is? So that at WrestleMania, Roman can kick out of an F5. And when everybody isn't shocked, Vince McMahon will wonder, well, why aren't the people surprised? Maybe it's because at the last WrestleMania match the two of them had, Roman kicked out of about two or three different F5s. They have short-term memory issues in this company. But yeah, I think Rollins and Strowman, man, either one of those guys challenging Lesnar at WrestleMania, if it were up to me, it's tough because now, you know, we're so close to WrestleMania. And if Roman doesn't challenge for the championship, what role does he have? And I know there are people that could care less about or could not care less about the guy and probably wish he wasn't even on the show at all. That's ridiculous. You've got to find then a role for Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. But time-wise, where things stand right now, you've got Strowman. People, I think, are itching to see him win that championship, and the same now for Rollins. And I would probably go with either one of those guys over Roman just because the timing just feels right. Yeah, you don't want to miss your mark. Some people say that New Japan missed their mark with Naito. They should have put the title on him at Wrestle Kingdom, and they didn't. Yeah, it's a fair point. I think you can make that point. But timing is such an important thing. And right now, those two guys have a lot of momentum. Will that momentum be there after WrestleMania? I don't know. Brian from, let's go to Kayron from New York. What do you think of Mark Henry telling TMZ that the only way Hulk Hogan would be welcome back into the WWE locker room is if he apologizes to all of the black performers on the roster. I agree with Mark Henry. If he feels that that's what it would... And Henry now is all but retired. I mean, he may not consider himself officially to be retired, and maybe he's not. Maybe he'll have a cameo in the Andre Battle Royal this year or something, but he's all but retired. He's basically, at this point, a spokesman. He's an ambassador. I don't know if he's a producer, who like a Dean Malenko or an Arn Anderson or someone like that behind the scenes. I haven't heard that. But he's sort of the elder statesman in this company. He's been there a very long time. He's very well respected. And if that's how he feels, if that's what he feels it would take for Hogan to get back into the good graces of all of the black wrestlers in the company, then that's what Hogan should do. But I got to tell you, you know, when I saw the TMZ story, I went back and I listened to that leaked audio. And look, the guy had his privacy invaded, no doubt about it. That's a terrible thing. Hogan was wronged as well in this situation. But what's done is done. It's out there. You can't put the genie back into the bottle. It sucks for Hogan, but it's out there. And you can't put your fingers in your ears like a five-year-old baby and go, nah, 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 I can't hear you. Like, you know, everybody heard the audio. It's all there for everybody to listen to. It's out in the open. And people did hear it, and they were offended by it. And I listened back to the audio of what he said last week, and I knew it was bad, but I had forgotten how bad it really was. It really was awful. If you listen to the full audio, it's like over a minute, it really is awful what he said on that tape. I mean, this wasn't like a passing racial epitaph that he dropped. This was, I mean, he was calm. He wasn't yelling and screaming and angry and stuff, but this was like a tirade. I mean, there's just no way around it. So if that's how all of the black talent feels behind the scenes, it's their locker room. It's not Hulk Hogan's. And if that's what it takes, then I think he should. And if Hogan is not willing to do that, and I suspect that he is, I get the sense Hogan is just itching to come back. He'll do whatever they ask him to do. So I suspect if that's what it takes, he'll do it. But if for some reason he doesn't want to, if he is of the opinion that I've already paid my penance and I've already apologized and I'm not going to do it again, then he shouldn't be welcome back. Loose Cannon Lopez, he's got a question. I've been binge-watching 2001 WWE on the network, including No Way Out. The main event was Kurt Angle versus The Rock for the WWE title. The match went well until the finish, which still puzzles me. The Rock hits the rock bottom, and before Earl Hebner counts the three, he holds up the count even though Angle never kicked out. The Rock picked up Angle for a second rock bottom, and Earl made the three. You can tell The Rock looked upset. He would not let Earl raise his arm after the win. Was this a ref botch on Earl's part, or did Kurt Angle forget to kick out at two the first time? No, that was definitely a ref botch. That's one of the worst ones that I've seen from Earl. I remember that one. That first rock bottom was very clearly supposed to be the finish of the match. Kurt laid there, and Earl just stopped counting. I don't know what he was thinking. I don't know if he just thought it was meant to be a near fall, or I don't know. I don't know what was going through his head at the time. He claimed, you know, oh, it was just a two, and very clearly Kurt never got a shoulder up. He never kicked out. He wasn't close enough to put his foot on the ropes or anything. And everybody in the crowd is looking at it like, what the hell just happened here? Like, they could clearly see Kurt did not lift his shoulder up. Rock looks up at Earl, and like you said, he just picks up Kurt. I mean, there's no, like, interim spot that they do. He just picks him back up, hits second rock bottom, and Earl counts the three. Now, Kurt Angle did have a tendency to wait way too long to kick out of on near falls. I've documented this before. He waited a comically long time on those spots. I call that the Kurt Angle spot. He was notorious for this. Go back and watch the super kick towards the end of the match with Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 21. Kurt picks Shawn up. He's yelling at him. And Shawn just, out of nowhere, kicks him right in the face. It was such a great spot. And Shawn eventually crawls over on top of Kurt. And that's, you'll see it there. You know, Kurt just doesn't get his shoulder up in time. It's very obvious the ref has to hold up the count. It's embarrassing. Kurt did that a lot. I don't think that was the case here. He was not guilty of that here. This one was on Earl. He just had a brain fart. It happens. Albert from Laredo, Texas has a very simple audio question.
Hello, Solid Monster. It's Albert Ortiz from Laredo, Texas. My question to you this week is, how do you respond to when non-wrestling fans tell you, oh, but you know wrestling is fake, right? I personally just say, yeah, and turn around and just enjoy the product for what it is. So what do you do when a non-wrestling fan tells you wrestling is fake?
I say, is this fake? And then I kick him in the crotch. Works every time. That's for adults only. Kids, don't try that. But for you adults, it's great fun. Xavier, from Missouri. I recently started to re-watch some of the Coliseum videos that were posted on the network and was watching an Earthquake match. I remember an episode of Raw in which Earthquake sumo wrestled Yokozuna. Yokozuna was built as this monster who couldn't be beaten, yet WWE had Earthquake beat him. What was the reason for that match? I don't remember Earthquake getting some massive push afterwards. Well, he didn't get a massive push because he was pretty much gone right after that. I think they were planning on doing more with Earthquake, but I believe he gave notice to them. So he gave notice to them. It may have been a money issue. He left the company. He did a tour of Japan. Then he was in WCW. That's when he ended up back in WCW, and he was, I think, the Shark, and he ended up part of the Dungeon of Doom. And he got paid a lot of money by Turner to do it. Now, Earthquake, I mean, some people don't realize that Earthquake was actually a legitimate sumo wrestler very early on in his career. Yokozuna, the funny part about that is Yokozuna, who was supposed to be the sumo wrestler, he was supposed to be the guy with all the sumo experience and dressed like a sumo wrestler, actually never sumo wrestled a day in his life until this match. I went back and I watched it. They promoted Earthquake against Owen Hart for the following Monday in a King of the Ring qualifying match. This was back in 94. Owen would go on to win the tournament. But they promoted Quake and Owen in a qualifier. So my guess is they probably wanted Earthquake to have some momentum. Twofold. Number one, they wanted Earthquake to have a little bit of momentum going into the match with Owen. Instead of, you know, going in a loser. So he got a win here. And it wasn't like a regular match. So yeah, Yokozuna lost. But, you know, he was out of his element. There were no ropes. The object of the match was just to push the other guy out of the ring. It was not a traditional wrestling match. So what did he really lose? You know what I mean? So I think they wanted just to keep him strong. And the thing is, the match never happened. I think they claimed that Yokozuna bonsaied Earthquake on a house show or something. And anyway, it ended up being Doink the Clown. Talk about a replacement. And this wasn't the good Doink either. This was, by this point, babyface Doink. Shitty Doink, not 93 Doink. So Doink wrestled Owen. Owen beat him and went on to win the tournament. But I wonder if, and I don't know this. This is just a guess on my part. But I wonder if they planned on a rematch between Earthquake and Yokozuna, maybe at SummerSlam that year. Because it's very odd that Yokozuna was not on the SummerSlam card in 94. Unless he was hurt or something. And to my knowledge, I don't think he was. But SummerSlam 94, he was not on the show. He was not on the card at all. Now, he was on the Royal Rumble card. He was on the WrestleMania card. He lost to The Undertaker in a casket match at Survivor Series that year. Remember, Chuck Norris was there. And then Yoko went away for a while. But SummerSlam, he just wasn't on the card. And so I wonder if the idea was to continue to build up Earthquake, have a proper match between them at SummerSlam, and an easy win for Yokozuna before he went on to lose to The Undertaker at Survivor Series. Had Earthquake not walked out, that might have been the direction. Frank from Atlanta. The Razor Ramon character was one of my favorite wrestlers growing up. He was a great worker, he was a smart businessman, and he was always positioned as one of the top guys. Why wasn't he the guy at one point? Was it because of his drug problems? Was it because Vince ran with Bret and Shawn as champions? Had he not left for WCW, do you think Razor Ramon could have been world champion? He had the look, the charisma, the body of work, and the connection with the fans. Was there a time when Razor could have been the world champion? I think you nailed it with those first 2 points. The timing was just never right. And when Razor first came to WWE, Vince McMahon had already decided to run with Bret Hart. And then later on, Shawn Michaels as the top guy. Those were the guys that Vince was going to build around. Remember the whole new generation thing? Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels were the two that Vince was going to build around. As time went on, that's when, you know, Scott Hall's drug issues became more of an issue and started to catch up with him. And by that point, it would have been insane to put your world title on him and build around him. He was pushed hard right out of the gate when he first came in. I mean, within 2 months, I think, of debuting on TV in 92, he was tagging with Ric Flair in the main event of Survivor Series against Macho Man and Mr. Perfect. And at the Royal Rumble in 93, he challenged Bret Hart for the WWF title on a bad knee. He was a big guy physically, right, which Vince liked. He was probably 6'5", 6'6". Very over with the crowd. The crowd basically turned him babyface in 93. But that just wasn't the role for him, you know. Now, could he have been the guy? I think that if they were ever going to run with him, if there was ever a time that there was any chance that maybe that would have worked and they might have been able to go with him as quote-unquote the guy and put the world title on him and given him the chance, the time to do so would have been late 94 after his feud with Diesel. Instead of going with Diesel as the champion and making him champion for a year, they could have gone with Razor Ramon. I mean, let's be honest here. Looking back, how much worse could things have been with Razor as the champion? I don't know how he would have done. Maybe he would have been shit as a draw. Who knows? It's impossible to say. 95 was a terrible year in wrestling in general, at least between WWF and WCW. It was not a good time business-wise, in terms of a lot of the shows and the quality of stuff. That was a rough year. So, you know, when people talk about Diesel and his run and everything, I think you do have to factor that into things. It's like the chicken and the egg, which came first. Was Diesel the root cause of business being bad for WWF in 95? Or was business going to be bad no matter what, and Diesel was sort of a casualty of that? I think that's a debate that you could certainly have. But that would have been it. I don't think time-wise it ever really worked out for Razor where I could look and say, oh, they should have put the world title on him. Even 94, even late 94, it might be a bit of a stretch, but if you were going to do it, you'd have to swap out Diesel for Razor and give Razor the chance instead, and how he does is anybody's guess. I think he probably could have done pretty well. But after that, it was just one problem after another, and suspensions, and there's no way you could have built your company around somebody like that. Dylan from Toronto, buy or sell on the better gimmick match, Hell in a Cell, or the Elimination Chamber? That's a tough one for me to answer. I enjoyed Hell in a Cell more as an attraction and not as a monthly pay-per-view. So a lot of my favorite Hell in a Cell matches are from those earlier years. The first one, I think, in my opinion, is still the best one with Shawn and Undertaker. Foley and Undertaker was just a spectacle. I don't even know how to rank that one. It's just a total spectacle, like a car crash. Lesnar and Undertaker from 2002, I would rank in the top three. That was an excellent one. But, you know, it's not like I haven't enjoyed any of the more recent ones. I enjoyed their rematch in the Cell in 2015. I loved the New Day Usos Hell in a Cell match from last year's show. I had that as number five on my top 10 WWE matches for 2017. That match was proof that Hell in a Cell can still be done right to climax a big feud. It can still be used to blow off a big feud and be wild even without blood. A lot of those earlier matches did have the benefit of blood and violence that we don't get a whole lot of these days, but they also generally served a purpose. It wasn't just, oh, it's that time of year. And that's what I used to like about Hell in a Cell. The Elimination Chamber has mostly turned out some really good matches, way more than Hell in a Cell has in like the last, probably the last 5 or 10 years. The match last year where it came down to Bray Wyatt and AJ Styles and Bray won the championship, that's one of the best chamber matches they've ever done. I like it when the champion is shockingly pinned and you know that whoever wins are going to get a new champion, or like Edge losing one title in one match for one brand and then stealing a spot in the other chamber, which of course defied all logic how that was even allowed, but yeah, he just locks himself in the pod, and all of a sudden, he's not even a Raw, or was it SmackDown? I think he won the SmackDown title. He wasn't even on that brand, and yet he locks himself in the pod, he becomes an official part of the match, and then wins. But you know what? Yeah, it didn't make sense, but it was kind of a clever idea. You know, so I like some of the things like that they've done over the years. There's been a lot of fun moments like that in those chamber matches. I would buy on the chamber and sell on Hell in a Cell, largely based on the last few years. I think there's been better chamber matches than Hell in a Cell matches. If you have questions for the mailbag, keep sending them on into me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Have to cut things a little short this week. We'll get these predictions on up here for you in a moment on the Elimination Chamber. Always want to get these up as quickly as possible on pay-per-view Sundays. Don't forget the t-shirt sale on Pro Wrestling Tees begins tomorrow. Use the promo code NEWSITE, all one word, starting at 1 Eastern through Wednesday at 1 Eastern. You can get the new Always Point to the Sign Sound Off shirt in our store, among many others that are available for 20% off. And I'll have a Facebook invite up in the next couple of days for our WrestleMania weekend meetup. It'll be WrestleMania Sunday, April 8th, starting at 11 a.m. at Pat O'Brien's Courtyard Restaurant on Bourbon Street in New Orleans. We'll be having some fun a few hours before WrestleMania, eating, drinking, doing whatever else. I mean, God knows what's going to be going on that weekend. It's going to be insane. So I'm looking forward to seeing, hopefully, many of you there. Be sure to RSVP once that goes up. Don't forget, we are available to stream or download on Spotify now. And I know we've got some new Spotify listeners out there, so welcome to all of you. I will be back with a Hell in a Cell. Hell in a Cell. Look, I see after that last question, I'm all confused now. Elimination Chamber. We have the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view tonight. I will be doing an Elimination Chamber Sound Off Extra review on YouTube, as I always do. That should go up, well, it won't go up until sometime early in the morning, but a few hours after the show, watch for it. Video will be up, all my thoughts on the pay-per-view, and then we will be back for episode 537 next weekend. We're getting that much closer to WrestleMania. So until then, be well, stay safe. Have yourselves a fantastic week. Hopefully your Sunday's looking a lot less dreary than it is outside here in New York. And I'll see you back here for a Sound Off Extra talking Elimination Chamber tonight on the YouTube channel. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
They have Kane in the back. This is what he said. Tonight, I will delight as I enter the abyss with a fellow monster. But it is I who will climb out alone and with a smile across my face.
Oh, oh my God.
What do they think this is, Shakespeare?
I was driving yesterday and some asshole double parks his car in the service lane.
I should have cut a promo the way the WWE would script one out for me. Why art thou parking like one's smelly orifice? I wish a thousand deaths upon thee. Then I could do a fucking tope and we could fade to commercial.
Since 2007, The Sala Monster Sounds Off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Sala Monster Sound Off.